Hey everybody, welcome to Miopia Movies. Please pardon my congestion. I think I'm fighting a little cold, I guess. But we are in the midst of our romantic month, and we are talking Flashdance, a spicy picture about dancing and romance and dancing. And frankly, I had never seen it before, though it turns out I know a lot of the random scenes, as I'm sure most of you do, because it's kind of an iconic movie. But it was a hell of a lot of fun. And I hope you enjoy our episode on it. Thanks for everyone who supports us. Thanks for doing what you do to keep us on the charts. Thanks for sharing. And just thank you in general. Bye, everyone.
Welcome to Miopia Movies. This week, we're talking Flashdance, the made-for-TV version of Showgirls. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, Riffer on Cine Prov, and on panel we've got...
Nora Turnett. I contribute, and I love this movie.
Lauren! And I, too, am a maniac on the dance floor.
Yako, and I cannot dance.
Hello, everyone. This is Daniel. I have been banned from pretty much every dance club and burlesque show I've ever been to.
Fuck you, do.
There was some unpleasantness. I can never go back.
So this is, I would guess, the first of what becomes a trilogy, what I think of the 80s trilogies of dance movies. Not where it's like a musical and so people are dancing, but like literally movies about dancing. This is 1983's Flashdance, followed by 1984's Footloose and 1987's Dirty Dancing. I'm sure I'm missing movies there, but that's what I think of when I think of the trilogy.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat there. That's whenever I think like dance movies, it's those three, even though I haven't seen Footloose. I know we did Dirty Dancing a while ago, which was far less of a dance movie than a 1960s abortion panic movie, and then we've got this.
Dirty Dancing has a point. This doesn't really have a purpose.
Well, time out before y'all start bashing this amazing movie. Is Footloose, Flashdance, and Dirty Dancing in the same universe?
I doubt it. To me, it's more like Flashdance was interesting. Has a rocking soundtrack. More than anything, I think you could say it's a great soundtrack.
Oh, one of the all-time best soundtracks.
And then essentially, Footloose and Dirty Dancing tell a similar story. People who aren't supposed to dance want to dance and eventually get to dance. And then it's just a matter of either upgrading the actors, upgrading the script, or upgrading the music. And all of them have great soundtracks. All of them have progressively better casts. I don't know. It's fun across the board. I could put on almost any of these and have a pretty good time if only the soundtracks are incredible. And you do get some pretty good dancing. I just didn't realize the two iconic scenes for this movie happened in the first 45 seconds. Because she arches her backs and gets water splashed.
Well, the last 45 and the first 45 and the last 45.
Right, exactly. Because, like, her in the black leotard where she's, like, dancing as quickly as she can, that's also what I think of. Like, because they parody that a lot.
Yeah.
And also, not Winona Ryder looks really hot in those scenes. And she looks really good and a very confident dancer. And they just cut to anything else.
You know how she was cast.
What's up?
You know how she was cast in this movie, right?
Dance off?
Not Winona Ryder. We're talking about Jennifer Beals,
I'm so glad you said that. That's all I could think of when I saw her, is that they're trying so hard for her to be a Winona Ryder.
Right?
She's what Winona Ryder when you order from Wish.
You know what? If they did in the next season of Stranger Things, a Flashdance parody scene, it'd be brilliant, because literally all I thought was like, are we sure this is a Winona Ryder? Put out something valuable. See if she steals it.
You gotta be confused. But you're saying Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Girl from Beetlejuice. And who y'all saying now?
They look the same, man.
They look so similar.
I don't think so.
I don't see it.
Even their mannerisms and way of talking and something with her eyes. Oh, they were totally trying to Winona Ryder thing. Totally.
I guess Winona Ryder, it was very, I mean, the earliest thing I saw her was with, it was like Beetlejuice. So I had that gothic scene image to her. This seems more like I don't know. I don't have an actress in reference to it, but I don't see the Winona Ryder.
Yeah. Oh, they look really similar.
Although I will say,
Jennifer Beals got cast in this movie is that the producers, one of whom is Jerry Bruckheimer, had like a bunch of finalists. I think one of them was Demi Moore was another one. But anyway, they couldn't decide between like three or four actresses. So they took their headshots, and there was a construction zone right next door to the offices where everyone was working. So they went to the construction zone, showed the headshots to some of the workers. They were like, okay, which of these women do you want to sleep with the most? They all put Jennifer Beals. She got cast in the movie.
Well, I will say, I'm laughing, but that's how Johnny Depp got cast in Friday the 13th, right? No, Nightmare on Elm Street. Because what's his name? Wes Craven just took the headshots to his daughter and just said, which is the cutest?
Maybe she's like Heather's Winona Ryder. It's been a long time since I saw that one, but.
Oh, that's a great one.
How about a very young Jessica Alba?
Yeah, I mean, I see something more like.
I have posted some picture links in the chat, and you see if Lauren and I are crazy here. Because this woman has the same eyes, she has the same expression, she has the same floofy hair.
Well, I mean, we could talk about whether or not Jennifer Beals looks like someone else all night long.
We could, but we will. So I think she looks, no, I'm kidding. Lauren, why don't you give us the plot synopsis of what this movie is?
Sure. Okay. So Alex is the main female here. Her name's Alex Owens, who is Jennifer Beals, who we're talking about. And she plays a lovely, beautiful young woman who is 18, which I'm going to address later. But she works a day job in a steel mill. She is a welder. And so you see that scene, you know, with her in the hole. Anyway, and then she dances at a bar at night. Now this is Molly's bar, is called, and she doesn't strip, that because that comes very important later. She doesn't strip or anything, but it's just like, it's just super sexy dancing. Her boss, Nick Hurley, is his name. He played by Michael Norrie, comes to see her dance at one of her shows. And you get that iconic first beautiful shot where in the whole water, I mean, and her in the shadows, it's just beautiful. So he sees that. And then he sees her at this steel mill the next day and introduces himself. And it's basically like, hey, I saw you dance. You know, I saw you dance. Basically, I felt like you introducing myself. He's going, can we please have sex? Can we please have sex? Can we please have sex? So he becomes really interested in Alex and wants to support her. So through this, Alex becomes more confident that she wants to be accepted into this prestigious dance school, this local dance school. And so she decides to apply. She's frightened of failure, but Nick cheers her on. I don't want to ruin too much, but Alex finds out, she gets pissed because she finds out that Nick kind of used his connections for that. But anyway, she ends up auditioning for this big preparatory prestigious dance school at the end, and has that iconic kind of maniac on the dance floor song. And then comes running out to him. So that's basically the gist in a nutshell.
A lot of dancing in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we said, I had never seen the movie before. So this was interesting for me because it was like if I were to watch Tiger King, I feel like I kind of know I've never watched it, but I feel like I've seen so many references to it. Like this movie is parodied a lot. So I was like, okay, I kind of think I know what it's gonna be. And I sort of had it like right. I actually thought it was gonna be more similar to Showgirls than it was. It definitely felt more like cutesy than I thought it was gonna be. I thought it would be, you know, kind of more. It is rated R because there's a lot of nudity, but otherwise, I guess it's not super bad. But all of that is to say that I was really excited how in the very first, like the dance montage, the famous one where she moves her feet really fast, she has a puppy dog. And like the puppy is really featured a lot in the dance. Like, because like she's like doing this dancing around him and he's sitting there. And then at the end, she has a towel and she has a little towel wrapped around him. And I'm just really sad that I had not seen that yet. Like they always cut the dog out in all of the references to this movie. Anyway, yeah. That's all. I just love the puppy.
were you disappointed that it wasn't similar to Showgirls? Like, and also, did anyone notice that the puppies. Was it a puppy?
Yeah, she had all dogs are puppies. She lived by herself.
All right, but this because the bark from this dog was way too high pitched for
all dogs are puppies.
Sure. But
dog for protection because her boss comes by later today and is like, oh, yeah. You don't need security or whatever.
Did you
like recognize how many people have parodied this though? Like that, especially the water falling. Like, was that recognizable to you or no?
Yeah. The water thing, the chair dance. The quick feet and the
hair thing, so much water.
Yeah, and then the final scene after that where she's like, can I start it again? That's all that I knew.
Even the peanuts parodied this with like the feet.
And like, was I disappointed that it wasn't more like Showgirls? Like, what do you mean? Like, do you think
it's even more?
I like Showgirls, but I, having kids, I kind of want a movie to be totally for adults or totally for kids. Like I don't like this kind of middle area where it's like 90% of the movie probably would be okay for a kid to see, and then there's like 10% of it that I absolutely wouldn't want them to see. So I don't know. That's kind of a weird way to think about it now, but that's just where I am. It's like I either have to watch it alone or with them. So, I could have gone either way, either more family friendly or more adult.
That's what the 80s is. The 80s is the Wild West. There's like that weird ghost blowjob scene in Ghostbusters too. Like Ghostbusters is like a normal film. What? And then, yeah, there's in the middle of a montage in Ghostbusters, there's a scene where all of a sudden Dan Aykroyd gets thrown on a bed while wearing a military uniform for some reason. And the ghost takes his pants off and then his eyes cross.
I think you dreamed that.
No.
No, that's really in Ghostbusters. Nora looks this up.
Right now.
Have you guys ever seen, I think it's called The Cutting Edge?
Yeah.
Is that a dance movie or a hockey movie?
I mean, can't it be both?
I guess it's more hockey movie than dance movie. I really like that one. That's the one that I saw when I was younger. But
We should just talk a little bit about this cast and such for a minute. But Jennifer Beals is great. She's still in the stuff, including last year she was in The Book of Boba Fett, among other things. But for a second, I just want to talk about this director. Because if you want to make a sleazy 80s and 90s action movie, or a sleazy 80s or 90s kind of like erotic thriller, I guess is his genre, it's him. The guy's named Adrian Lin. But he also did Indecent Proposal. He did Fatal Attraction. He did the Lolita remake.
He did Nine and a Half Weeks.
And then he didn't do anything for a while after the Lolita remake. Then he made a movie called Unfaithful. The 2002 one?
Oh yeah.
That's the same guy.
Unfaithful.
And then like movie that's more famous for its trick than the movie itself, but he also did Jacob's Ladder, which is I think a very good movie. With Tim Robbins and Danny Aiello in it. But this movie is kind of like my first erotic thriller. It's got this kind of like you said, Keiko, like most of it's almost okay, which means it probably had a TV edit that was on all the time.
Because definitely. Even
the erotic dancing that you see, for the most part, it turns out she's wearing lingerie most of the time, but it doesn't look like it because she's completely in shadow. So you can get away with a lot of sins that way. And the lighting is incredible. In fact, I was surprised looking at him that he's just a cinematographer to director and that he didn't do a bunch of music videos. Like if you told me he did a bunch of hair metal videos in the 80s or Calvin Klein ads, I'd have believed you, right?
Yeah.
And what's kind of interesting about it is the fact that, not that she's plain, but she's played as just like another girl who has a dream, but you know, she's just a working girl as opposed to, she's secretly sexy the whole time. There's never a scene where she takes off her glasses, lets down her hair, and like, oh my God, she's beautiful. There's no she's all that moment. She's just kind of her, which is
nice. Well, She's gorgeous throughout the movie, even when she's welding.
Erotic welding is my favorite.
Especially when she's welding.
Yes. Also, you know, I haven't been.
I love how at first you don't know it's her because they put it down and it just says Alex. So you think it's like a man. And she like takes it off and it's like.
I don't know, man. I haven't worked in a lot of warehouses or spark factories, as I call them in movies. But you'd think she'd have her hair tied back a little bit better. Because that just seems like all of it would just burst in. And again, she might have the naturally curliest, frizziest hair of all time. But those products in the 80s, 1983, she's a walking practical effect. That I mean, Michael like Jackson at this point.
Workman's comp. We know.
I mean, it was around here. And Nor, if you don't know this, you should look it up. But on the set of a Pepsi commercial, Michael Jackson's hair caught fire.
I do know that. It's the reason why my family stopped with Jerry Curls. I just want to say this. There was a good point in the movie where, like, I felt like I needed a tetanus shot. And if I'm not mistaken, this movie's in Pittsburgh, which is the land of steel and bridges.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the only fact I know about Pittsburgh. I know that they have bridges that go underneath bridges so that they make sure that the stuff from top of that bridge falls onto the bridge and not the subsequent highway or you know, roads of that nature. But I'll pose this question to everyone. When did dance movies stop being cool? Because I miss dance movies.
Well, I mean, in the 20-teens, we have Glee and, like, High School Musicals and that kind of stuff.
Step
Center
Up.
Center Stage.
3D and 4, yeah.
We got Center Stage. We got, what's the one with Julia Stiles?
Was that Save the Last Dance?
Save the Last Dance.
Save the Last Dance. There was another one that Richard Gere was in, like a salsa.
That was a remake of a Chinese movie. Which one was that?
That I actually, I love the soundtrack for.
And I mean, this goes back to Grease and being kind of a musical, but Mamma Mia is kind of that in space.
Yeah. The Silver Linings Playbook, that had dancing in it.
It did, and Mental Illness, which this also kind of does.
It's just not as cool. Like, I was watching her dance and I was like, I feel like I could do, and I can't dance. And I was like, I feel like I could do that. Maybe I probably really can't, but.
I miss the days where you could solve a conflict with, you know, what I mean? Like, dance.
You're going to have a dance off.
That was a big thing. And I'm, as I become more of an adult, I'm sorely disappointed for the amount of like.
You should just bring it back. Be responsible. The next time something comes up at work where, you know, you feel some like tension with a colleague.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you challenge someone to a dance off though?
Oh, simple. You get your cardboard box, flatten it out, build a boom box that you had hidden in your desk and start popping and locking and breakdancing, you know, and like that's just
you gotta do like strong eye contact.
We could solve world peace, y'all, which is
legit. You could because every country has dance, you know. For some reason I kind of want to see Hairspray after this to kind of like desensitize my brain, but then that goes into a lot of racial things for some reason.
I was gonna say though, speaking of racial things, a lot of the movies that you're thinking of in the 2000s are that kind of thing. There's Drumline, there's Stomp the Yard, right? That's kind of where they went, and then they just started remaking this shit because there's like a Dirty Dancing Havana Nights movie which comes out in 2004. There's also a remake of Footloose in 2011.
That was a good remake. I will say that our generation, whatever you guys, it was a good movie.
But Dirty Dancing Havana Nights was also a cross-cultural movie because it was about the girl who's in Havana meets a guy. Like, so it's not really, it's not just the dance. I mean, I think Center Stage was.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say,
what bothered me about this movie is the fact that she's only 18. Like,
thank you.
What the hell? Why is she by herself, first of all?
Why isn't she in school?
Why is she not in school? Why is she completely on her own where she has to work at like not a nudie bar, but a sexy bar in Weld. Like, what? Clearly something bad must have happened to her or something. There's some sort of trauma. And I don't know about y'all, but when I was 18, I didn't quite have her experience, it seems. Like, that was clearly not her first time around. I don't know.
I was just curious, like, where that sentence was going. None of you are going to guess who wrote the movie Havana Nights, Dirty Dancing Havana Nights. You'll never guess in a million years unless you know.
Quentin Tarantino.
Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh!
The host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me wrote Havana Nights.
That means it'll be good, though.
But anyway, so to your point about her dancing and her age and her, you know, sensuality, we do need to introduce the rest of her family because they are nuts, including yelling bald dad and sister who wants to be a figure skater. In any other decade, this is now a reality show of talented sisters and their, I don't know, Michael Jackson's dad, like the guy who hates them.
Oh, that was her sister. I just thought that was her best friend.
That was her sister, right?
That makes so much more sense. Okay.
Well, she says we're best friends. I don't know. I think that they are sisters based on the relationship with the parents, because the parents are like the girl's like, go see her, you know, skate. But like, I would say the thing that makes this, like, I think this is pretty normal for like a lower class family, like to move out when you're 18. I moved out when I was 18. Like, yeah. I was on my own. Like, I could have gotten up to whatever. I just worked and went to school, but I could have gotten up to, you know, crazy stuff if I wanted to, because I was on my own. I think what makes it unique is that both of the girls are talented and have like a cool thing. Like, you know, like I just had a job, not, you know, a skill, like ice skating or dancing.
Got it. No, I thought they were best friends, not sisters. That makes a lot more sense.
I also just want to throw out there, the dancing thing is much more complicated in my head than anything else. Not because she wants to dance. My whole thing, like my feeling on this was, she wanted to apply to the ballet academy, and this is the way she learns dance. I guess what we call modern dance. Fine. And the only place she can find to do it is this, like, almost strip club. It's burlesque because she doesn't actually get nude, but it is what it is. Okay, fine. But then where the hell is this dance academy? It's still Pittsburgh. Like, I thought it was a commentary on the fact that, oh, this is Pittsburgh and this is the best she can do. There's not, like, community ballet. So she's here. And then all of a sudden, we're in this building in France. She smash cut to a dance academy somewhere in Paris. And she's like, now I'm going to show you my song. And by the way, if you ever do an audition, it's hard enough. But if you have to restart, you've lost. I'm sorry. Like, she resets that record. And they're like, and the guy, like, relights his cigarette. And you're just like, oh, all right. No, no, no. You've lost. I'm sorry. Jennifer Beals. It'd be great if at the end she doesn't get in and they just smash cut back to the factory.
They were clearly trying to show that she got back up, unlike Jeannie.
Right.
Jeannie didn't, when she was ice skating, she stayed. Someone literally had to come get her off the ice.
Yeah.
So I think that's what the point they were trying to make is that she's standing up. But yeah, if you do that during an audition, you're bye.
That's right.
It didn't work for Tonya Harding. It ain't going to work for Jennifer Beals.
Oh, by the way, if you remade this, speaking of Tonya Harding, it would be Margot Robbie, right?
Like, probably. Jennifer Beals
would be Margot Robbie?
No, I think at this point, Margot Robbie's too old to play the character.
Zendaya. It would be Zendaya. Yes.
Oh, Zendaya, yeah.
And plus,
and then Margot Beyonce Robbie can play her older sister who's into figure skating.
And plus, Margot Robbie did play Tonya Harding.
That's why I was saying.
One nominated for an Oscar for doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did not know that she broke that girl's ankle, allegedly.
Kneecap, and there's nothing alleged about it. She was convicted for conspiring to do that.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't watch the same court case.
I felt like the boss guy was a little, like, yucky. Like,
grooming.
Yeah, like, he's okay because he's cute, I guess. Like, because he's
I think that relationship, they do it better in Showgirls, where he's just a scumbag and it's okay. Like, you don't need to make him a romantic lead. It makes it much worse because it does seem more like, I'm only 35 and you're 18, so it works. Like, it's very, because also this actor, Michael Norrie, he's one of those dudes who came out of the womb looking 25. Like, he has, yes. Like, he has, like, these strong, like, cheekbones.
Was he also 18?
Yeah, no, I'm just, no. I mean, it's Beverly Hills 90210 where everyone's 35. Like,
they make a lot of jokes about his age or whatever, actually.
She does. And I mean, like, he has these, like, strong cheekbones that always have a 5 o'clock shadow, so he does look like he's, like, 38. Which is fine. It's just like
80s, that beautiful 80s perm, you know?
Am I the only one, I guess, now then, who felt a little creeped out watching this movie? Because of her age and that guy and how obsessed the camera was with Jennifer Beals, with all the women's bodies in this movie, even when it really wasn't supposed to be that erotic.
Yeah, well, like I said, when he first meets her, and when Nick first meets her, and he's like, oh, hey, you're Alex, I saw you dance. Like, I was
totally the guy without pants like on
I said, I felt like he was saying, can we please have sex? Can we please?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, that was the part that was kind of creepy. I mean, I don't know, because maybe I don't like it because back when I was in college, I would be kind of furious at the upperclassmen that would hit on the freshmen because, you know, I call me old-fashioned, but I like to hit on girls my own age and subsequently older, but back then. And so I don't know. It is creepy. And obviously, it didn't seem romantic because as you learn about the dude, like, he's already been married and he's just,
yeah.
He's prowling on the young coworkers and stuff.
Like, right.
And he's just using
also, he went to watch her dance and he happened to see the really good, like, hot chair water dance. What if he had gone on the night where she did her creepy TV flashy dance? Like, we would have been like, whoa.
Yeah.
When he does, when she does the talking heads thing, that's strange, dude. But also, just the idea that, okay, I mean, the strip club or the burlesque dance and the whatever. But the guy goes, I saw you dance. No. I ran into you somewhere else. I was at the bar when you were leaving. No, I was the dude in the back without pants on. You're pretty hot. Like, it's a strong move to be like, yeah, I can help. You should see my jackhammer. Like, it's just, it's construction. The fact that they're trying to make it like a meet cute kind of thing. No. It's creepy. Totally is creepy. And that's why Kyle MacLachlan in Showgirls makes so much more sense where they're just having that weird pool sex, like, because it's supposed to be creepy. It is creepy, and here's, you know what, here's two good looking people having sex in a pool. That's somehow more wholesome than this. And it's like, you know, I could be your dad's coworker and you've got great tits.
Have we mentioned yet that the guy who wrote Showgirls is the same guy that wrote Flashdance?
Yes, we have. That's why we keep referencing it, but it's really like a first draft of Showgirls, which I guess now we have to do. So stay tuned for the next February when we do Showgirls.
Oh,
definitely it just came out for the HD. Get the HD for Showgirls.
Vinegar Syndrome just put out a 4K disc of Showgirls.
Friend of the show, Jeremy Reigel, got me one year for a birthday gift a late 90s box set of Showgirls, which comes with a mask and furry handcuffs.
I'm
nice. It's in the basement. Next time I'll show it to you, but it's really something.
The boss is creepy. I'll tell you why, because he waits for Alex when she kisses him and she pours beer on his pants when he grabs her ass. And so,
That's the different boss though. That's not the one that she likes.
I'm talking about the boss from from across the street.
He's a bad guy. He's a bad guy.
I don't know his name, but him, the owner of the strip club across the street.
I think his name is Jake.
Sure, let's go with that. And so he waits for Alex in his car, and her friend gets a bloody nose, the other guy, the comedian. And that's when Nick comes in and saves the day and is like, want to ride or whatever. And so that's what makes her, I guess, like change her mind about him.
Let's keep talking about that scene. Number one, the comedian.
Yeah, we should introduce him. Nora, introduce us to the comedian.
Well, hold on. Let me get his name. But basically, so I guess there's three groups of friends. One is a waitress. One that's a comedian, and Allie, she's like the actual dancer itself. And I guess the comedian, what's his name?
Name is Johnny C. He's played by an actor named Lee Ving. And for those of you who likes 80s comedy, he's Mr. Body from Clue, the guy who gets killed that sets off the whole movie.
Oh, yes. Yep, absolutely.
Essentially, he's a cook who wants to be an aspiring comedian, and he has one set that we see him, and he bombs until he starts making a joke about putting cockroaches in the hamburgers, in which everyone scoffs. And I get that's what, I mean, for me, that wasn't my taste of comedy. And then he makes sports jokes, and really people are there just to see the burlesque show. But essentially, Lauren, from the scene that you're referencing to, when I guess the owner of the strip club, or the guy that works the strip club, goes to Alex, and I don't know, his defense, her friend's defense, was just yelling at him, tell him to stop, and his goon behind him just like punches him right in the nose, gets a bloody nose, and her love interest is out of his car, and he doesn't really say anything. He just says stop, and that's it. And then she goes home. Homie follows her behind with his car, again creepy, till she gets home. And I don't know, like, this is so if this dude was just let's just say he was like 800 pounds. Just not attractive.
And it's because he's cute. It's just okay, but he's cute.
That's what I'm saying. Because the guy from the strip club, he was pulling out the same moves, except he was a little handsy. Because he was cute. And he's hanging out with his ex-wife.
Yeah.
Would you date someone that was still dating his ex-wife on an occasional basis?
Okay, well,
why not?
I also think part of it is supposed to be playing off the fact that she's supposed to be naive. I'm not saying that's a good trope. I'm just saying that, like, he's supposed to be the rugged older dude and therefore blank.
Experienced.
It's an early 80s movie. It's not like they're giving this a lot of thought. Although I will say, I wish we got more from Johnny C, because I love his track. I mean, because again, Lauren, you do local theater a lot. I don't want to say I'm a burgeoning comedian, but I do live comedy here. This is Atlanta, at least. Can you imagine being in 1983 Pittsburgh and trying to make the national scene? And he's like, one day I'm going to be on Johnny Carson. I'm like, no, you're not. But it'd be great if his journey was trying to get on, like, Star Search, right? Like,
I mean, yeah. Mr. Rogers, that is my response to making it big coming from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but not telling, like, fart jokes. Mr. Rogers had dignity. This guy doesn't. But like,
now you're about to say Rogers held dick jokes.
But again, like, if he was saving up money so that he could move to LA or Chicago to be in like the Groundling, like if there was some mission for him other than like the sad person that doesn't get laid, it would be awesome. But
he can tell Pollock jokes.
Oh, dude, it's not even like funny jokes. It's like, what does a, and you're just like, guys, there's no punchline here.
Think maybe that's like a regional thing. I just figured that was just like something that I just missed, you know, that I'm like, I don't understand that. So,
oh, from Alabama, you didn't get a lot of Pollock jokes?
No,
it's a Midwestern thing because there are more Polish people in the Midwest. But here's a classic, Kiego. Why does the Polish Navy keep failing at making submarines? Because the screen door always leaks. That's the Polish.
Waka waka.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's that always
Could you dumb that down for me?
A screen door on a submarine has holes.
Has holes.
Therefore, it would leak.
There's our Pollock. He's our Pollock.
That went right through me. I'm like, I don't get it.
Well, I mean, to be
just
fair,
just like Cincinnati chili, right through you. All right. To be fair, I went to Pittsburgh very recently. Some of the buildings are really in Pittsburgh. The building with the statues out front, that's the Carnegie Museum of Art. They put French fries on salad in Pittsburgh. So it's my favorite city now. But yeah, no, it's it is what it is. They did film a lot in Pittsburgh, apparently. So there you go. No, all right, so the rest of this movie.
They start dating because he like saved her or whatever. And so I guess she feels like she'll give him more of a chance. So they go to dinner and they show like the whole 80s, you know, montage of them like playing and by the train tracks and, you know, that typical like falling in love a little bit montage. And so she goes to the ballet. Was it a close family friend? I wasn't understanding who that woman was to her.
I don't know who that Hannah lady is.
You're going to be pissed at me for doing this, but before we continue, I do have to ask, ballet, what, the little bear in the car?
Ballet.
I'm not helping anyone here. I don't know what's happening. So we're at a rail yard, which is a perfect place for romance, especially when you're wearing red heels.
Yeah.
but we should mention here, this is, you know, presumably where, like, they bang for the first time because he's, like, groping on her. But yep. The smash cut around here to her dancing in whiteface in front of a TV.
Yeah.
This is the one I don't get. I have no idea what's happening here. We're watching, like, a rejected musical from Rocky Horror Picture Show. And she's wearing, like, a red suit, white face makeup. And even the audience is looking like, this isn't very arousing.
I think I would, like, be mad if I went to, like, a club like that to pay to see girls dance. And that was what I got. But I think what they were showing was her being artistic. I think that was her exploring being artistic, that she didn't really care about, you know, being attractive. She wanted to be expressive. I think that's what that was, but it was extremely weird.
Wait, because obviously I didn't get the joke about the screen door and the submarine, so I didn't know that that was her. So that with the whole flash whatever.
Yeah.
So the previous dance before that, the one where she's like super glittered, is that still her or is that a different girl?
No, that
the glittered girl was not her.
Okay, because
that
I was
her other. That was her other friend.
Okay, just wanted to be sure because I had no idea that was the main girl. And to Nick, to answer your question, I will say it's the 80s. If you think about it, you know, like what year did this movie come out?
83.
So yeah, you know, you had the people with the weird MTV and the things like that. So I can only describe that as an artistic expression, as Keiko was saying.
Yeah, that's what I think. She's just being like avant-garde. That was cool though. What did you guys think about the lobster scene?
Oh, when they go to that nice restaurant?
Well,
you mean?
I guess there's a bit of a setup for it where she goes to the guy's house and she watches the show with the old lady and she sees the main dancer, but then she sees her get into her boyfriend's car. Right. And so she follows them and she ends up throwing a brick.
She's showing her age here. That is totally
a
teenager.
So she throws a brick through the window.
Go through a window with a boy you're pissed at.
and then she finds out that apparently that's his ex-wife and that he only takes her out once a year, and it's like, oh, okay. She's and then the it's board. Like,
yeah, and she like accepts this. I'd be like, what?
Then they're at a fancy restaurant all of a sudden, and she's being extremely suggestive with some crustaceans, and I thought it was really gross. Like,
not since the chicken and pink flamingos has there been such a disgusting use of an animal and eroticism combined.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but tell me about the chicken and the pink flamingo.
No, I don't think I shall.
No,
Daniel, you have it.
Right around where the woman who Ursula is based on is eating dog shit is when you need to stop watching them.
Nor
that's
Google
the literal
it.
End of the movie.
I will say this, Daniel, you've never seen me eat a steak, so.
Oh, okay.
Hey.
Is it very erotic?
It is very erotic when I eat a steak.
It was gross. I think she was trying to be suggestive, and clearly he enjoyed it because he makes his gross, like, little. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but I was like, oh, God. And then she starts playing footsie with him under the table.
Yeah. Well,
his ex-wife randomly shows up. No, I thought that was pretty fucking cool when his wife shows up and she takes off her jacket and she's wearing the bib.
She's wearing a dickie.
Yeah.
So that's a power move.
She's like, yeah, I screwed his brains out. And she's like, oh, wow. And just walks away. That, I don't know.
He made the same face as that reaction to the lobster when he was back at her apartment that very first night when she takes her bra off and through her sleeve.
Yeah.
And he's just like looking at her like, you know.
And I will also give them this, and maybe ladies fill me in here or play this game here, but she gets the 18 just out of high school sexuality pretty good, right? Like the subtly taking your bra off, like she's not wearing lingerie, like the idea of she has, but like she has a young body, the way she's playing with it, that to me seems much more like her notes than the script notes. And I don't know, and I mean, the guy is all wrong. That's weird.
Yeah, because the line movement, there was not it.
Yeah.
You want some pizza?
So she was clearly, because she keeps talking, is clearly meant to be that she's sexy without trying to be sexy. That's the point they're trying to make here. I thought that was pretty cool. That's pretty cool, sexy little trick. A lot of shows have parodied it. I mean, even look at Friends.
Yep.
So with Rachel and stuff. But yeah, I'm assuming that's the point of that is just to show, oh, she's, you know, sexy without even trying.
The sexy power. She has power in the situation, right? Like,
Just a question to, is it difficult to do that through the shirt?
Again, you can check in. To me, it's more the confidence that she can, it's not that she has something sexier. She's 18. She doesn't have Fredericks of Hollywood stuff. It's more like, this is how I show my power. I can be sexy doing this very simple thing underneath my 1980s. I could start a garage metal band because this three people could fit in this sweatshirt thing she's wearing.
That's the key. So that's the logistically, it really just depends on the shirt. If the shirt is big and baggy, like the sweater she was wearing, yeah, it's absolutely doable. If it's tight, if the neck is tight or like the arms are tight and it gets stuck in the sleeves, you know, it's not as easy.
As we continue to talk, I'm wearing an undershirt underneath this jersey, so we'll continue the conversation as I try to take my undershirt out of my jersey. So please continue. So, it's really that easy.
Yeah, you have to do it like while talking too, because she was talking the whole time.
So yeah, this movie was great. I liked it. Well, no, the one thing, okay, this was, I guess in my head, I really didn't want them to end up together. You know what I mean? Like, I really didn't want them to end up together. Because he was still hanging out with his ex-wife. And I guess that's just like other, like, I don't know, maybe it's my emotional things to me. Oh, wow.
Nice.
That was as sexy as you'd imagine, audience.
There's no way
I did it.
The age gap, the maturity, he's in his 30s, she's in, but to your point they it makes you want to root for them for sure.
Yes.
Ending
you want to root
for her, you know, the same thing, realizing she should go to the audition. And then maybe he like calls her. I don't know, I guess in that time period he would have left her a voicemail and she would have like deleted it and walked out the door.
Right.
So she gets the audition, she gets in, she's happy about it. She and Grunt can go off into the sunset. That's her puppy. And she can just say goodbye to the guy who is just a creepy predator who helped her get the confidence. Because that's really what it is she yeah. just needed the confidence to apply, and she was just scared to. She had it all along. It wasn't really his connection that got it for her, I don't think. But
and this is where the script gets messy. Because like at the beginning, it was like she almost auditions. And then, at least in my head, it's kind of a slobs versus snobs. It's kind of a classist yeah. thing where she's working class and these women are not, you know, more or less attractive, but they're put together. It's the thing you get in like the first Mighty Ducks movie where no one has real equipment, right? Like these women have the proper outfits, the, you know, the Lululemons, their hair is tucked back. They've done this before, and our heroine has not. And that makes her feel intimidated. And so, like you said, at the end, it's about the confidence. And so we have these long, loving scenes with her and her dog where she's looking at the application form right around where we're talking and trying to figure it out, whether or not she's going to do it. She's nervous. She's anxious. She doesn't know what to do. Smash cut to a strip club filled with people dressed like clowns. And this scene makes it comes out of left field. Especially since our comedian is dressed like an alligator wearing a hat.
What was the time frame? Because he left to LA and then came back.
It's been months, I guess.
I guess so. Because, like, did he run out of gas? Because to go from Pittsburgh to LA is easily more than a day. And if I'm not mistaken, yeah. he was in Volkswagen, which yeah.
oh.
could have broke down.
You know, and by the way, the girl he was hitting on, who now is dressed like she's in Greece, is dating to the guy who tried to rape what's-her-name and is, like, broke his nose. Like, it's yeah. just, there's a lot going on in this movie at this point. But she's dressed like one of the pink girls from Greece, as she's like, well, you know, he didn't leave me or whatever he says. I don't know. I couldn't be bothered at this point because we're still worried about whether or not baby's going to be stuck in the corner. Wait, that's
the one. Like the workout scene. Yeah, I like that one. I thought that one was fun where they're like working out together and
yeah.
talking.
Yeah.
That was another weird scene, though, because it seemed like Adrian Lin is a very erotic filmmaker. And with something like 9½ Weeks, which is about a sexual relationship,
right.
over the course of some undetermined period of time, that kind of makes sense that they would have like scenes of Mickey Rourke rubbing a cherry on Kim Basinger's lips. Here, it's just as erotic, but it's like, why?
We should mention here, this is when, right around, speaking of mostly erotic, where her sister's at a legit strip club.
Yeah.
owned by the same guy, which again, this is a scene that we really don't need. It doesn't add anything other than, I guess, our titty quotient was low. Like, do they really just need nudity here? Because the nudity isn't like...
It's Alex saving her. Like, that could have been shown in different ways.
Right. It didn't literally need her to be naked because literally she's shoved down. And so you just see, I mean, she's wearing panties, but you see her topless. And then they throw the guy into another woman. And it's apparently a slip and slide because it's like, whoa! which again, like... I hate the 80s and vague drug trade. It would have almost been better if she was taking drugs. Like, it, like truly, because it just feels more pornographic because
yeah.
everything else has been insinuated. And now it's just in the middle third, it's just her breasts. And she hasn't yeah. been on screen for 30 minutes at this point. So it's like, who do we have that has boobs? Oh, right, her sister. It's a very odd scene. But at this point, now she's fighting with the boyfriend. Because she thinks she only got the audition because he put in a good word for her, which I'm sorry, but in show business, sometimes it's who you know. And yeah. this is Pittsburgh. I mean, we didn't talk about it because it's an odd scene, but she has a freak out in a tunnel that does not exist in Pittsburgh. and she's like throwing shit around. She's wearing heels. Traffic is disrupted. And now Winona Ryder is really pissed off because her son has gone to the upside down, and she's slapping the shit out of people. Nor caught that. See, we're good.
I found a good time. Yeah, I got a joke.
Also, her boyfriend, wet, I mean, just damp from the rain, looks somehow 20 years older. He looks like Skeletor at this point. And I'm just like, oh, this is... Well, and I guess it's the director, if he had a plan, which he did not. But if he did, it's like, now she realizes the difference between the two of them, because he now looks like a wet rat.
It's, again, it's showing her age. It's showing her maturity. She's going to throw the rock through the window. She's going to have a little bit of a hissy fit when she finds, you know... Again, I think she's trying to show like that she's strong and independent. She doesn't need a man, but like Nick said, sometimes in show business, it's who you know. So
yeah, I don't know, man. Like it's a sleazy boyfriend, so I get it. I've known people who are like go through bad breakups and you don't want anything to do. But he did get you the audition. It's what you wanted. It's your lifelong dream. And guess
what? Your lifelong dream. I'm not gonna make another Simpsons joke. Yeah, that relationship is weird, but I mean, the movie just is not really interested in exploring any of its own characters. It's all just kind of weird, like a weird puzzle that they put together that was, it was like designed to be cut up and aired on MTV.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, because a lot of music, a lot of dancing, Flashdance.
And I mean, again, you want to talk about a scene out of nowhere. Around here's where she goes to a confessional to talk to a priest about what she did.
Yes.
In case you didn't know, this was the third act, and I needed to explain it to you, Father. It's a lot.
On MTV, that's where they would have put the PSA about, like, premarital sex or, well, like, whatever they wanted to PSA on, you know, to the kids.
So I'm not Catholic, if anyone could tell by my name. What's confessional like? Because, you know, you just do things and then it's forgiven?
Kind of, yeah.
We're diving into a deeper conversation about religion, but every time I see this and every time someone says a Hail Mary, I just quote a Tupac song. Is it obviously she didn't want to do this, but then... spoilers, was it her Nana or her Hannah? Because I'm very hard at hearing who was
she said Hannah, but I don't know who this person is to her.
No,
I assumed a good close friend. Hannah is who introduced her to ballet.
Makes sense. This entire time I thought it was Nana, and then spoilers, when she dies, I'm like, why isn't she crying? Thank you for clearing it up. But
No. To answer the question you asked 6 minutes ago, first, I think of Notorious B.I.G.'s 10 Crack Commandments. Second, it's a ritual wherein you tell a priest what you've done wrong, he pretends to listen and give you advice, and then you have to say a bunch of prayers, and then you're forgiven. So what you want to do is find the oldest priest who doesn't speak English and can barely hear, and then tell them whatever you want. but in film, it's a really good plot device because... just like Jewish people, Catholics thrive on guilt. So it's really good to define your character as feeling bad about stuff, which is why, for example, Daredevil makes a great Catholic guilt villain or hero type, because he's always confessing to things. That's why in the Mafia works out so well, because they have to talk about murdering people gruesomely and then, Father, for I have sinned. Like, it just comes up all the time. And also, I literally do not feel comfortable saying any of the lyrics to the 10 Crack Commandments on this podcast, but no, it's an excellent song. But yeah, that's all it is. It's a plot device to so that she feels bad about stuff. And that's kind of what confession is in all of these stories, because it really doesn't matter before this point and will not remember at the end. Though I should say this movie is 15% better if it just ends with the end of our audition and he's not waiting for her in the parking lot. Because with that confession scene beforehand, you're like, the point of confession is literally absolution. So you've absolved yourself of that old relationship, and now you're going through with the dance, and it should just be 1980s thing at the end, where there's a freeze frame of her like throwing her arm up like, yeah!
That would have been so much better. I agree.
Yep.
In fact, I wonder if that wasn't the ending, and there was some audience that was like, but what about Nick? Which, again, as the host of the podcast, that's what people ask all the time. Well, what about Nick? Lauren can't even look at me when I made that joke. It's fine. I get it. I love you anyway. It's fine. We've known each other for 40 years or whatever. You don't have to put up with me. It's fun. But
well, I was actually, to tell you the truth, I was actually thinking about the first time I watched this movie. I was in eighth grade. We were at a slumber party. One of my best friends, Sarah Davis, shout out to Sarah, back then, her older sisters were like, oh, we want to watch this movie. And I had never seen it. And so they were older. So I felt like I wasn't too sure it was too appropriate for eighth grade girls, you know. But I remember it being a lot more raunchy than it was now. Because if you look at movies now, good grief. Compared to now. Like, this would be so, you know, almost PG compared to some movies now. So that's what struck out to me, is I remember seeing this in eighth grade and being like, oh, this sexy movie. And should I tell my parents I saw this? And or whatever. And now, like, you look back and it's like, it's nothing compared to some things now.
Meanwhile, in my eighth grade sleepover, we would watch, like, one of the ones that I remember watching was Ginger Snaps.
Oh, that's a great movie, but that is even more awkward for eighth grade girls.
Yeah. Or what's the one about the two guys who have guns and are in churches?
Boondock Saints.
That one.
I was about to say, two good men. Well, I will say this, Lauren, in regards to just, you know, how what's considered our PG-13 NC-13 throughout, because I remember like watching Grease. Grease is a rated G, if I'm not mistaken, but if you know that shit, that's not
really.
Yeah, and I don't know, at the 80s, like, I don't know when Times Square in New York got rid of all the porn and things like that, so I guess there was like a teetering line of what's allowed it. Like, if an artist like Michael Jackson were today, they would have questions. I mean, they still have questions. They're still bringing up cases from him, and he's been dead for almost 8+ years. Like, him even grabbing his crotch a million times, that's considered. I remember when Britney Spears came out, there was like, oh my God, no, but there's half naked girls on TikTok. But it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was watching something on YouTube where that show NYPD Blue came out, and it's saying it kind of broke the barriers of what was allowed it on TV, you know what I mean? Like, pushing the limits and things like that. And I'm sure if I was a middle schooler during this time when the movie released and it came on VHS, this would be something that would be hidden in the cupboard. Like, guys, we're going to watch Flashdance still. You know, of course, you know, my sleepovers, we had the internet with the one family computer, in which we all got in trouble for, because we Googled something we're not supposed to, and the virus got through and things like that.
Come on. We were all there.
Paris Hilton came out with this like the height of the internet for me was Janet Jackson's titty and Paris One Night in Paris, and then you follow that with Kim Kardashian and things like that. It was just like the era of the leaked sex tapes, you know. And I'm sure in the 90s there was Anderson and Tommy Lee. I was about to say Tommy Lee Jones, but just
the old guy from Tommy Lee.
Yeah, from Tommy, you know what I'm saying? So long ago. Like, let me ask this from the group, since we're all critiquing the movie in our own way. How would this movie be perfect for any of y'all? Like, what would you change, or what would we do? We'll start with you, Nick.
What?
If you had to change something in this movie to give it 100% Rotten Tomatoes, Nick's score, like, what would you change?
Not possible. I mean, the honest answer is, you need to decide what kind of movie you want to make. This movie tries too many things. And so to fix it, honestly, get her a friend like her sister here, but they're both trying out for dance. And then her friend does whatever it takes. You know, maybe she starts, I mean, it's the 80s. She starts doing drugs or something, or she starts, God, if this was a teen, actually they were teenagers. She starts smoking and drinking, right? And it looks like it's going to make a difference. But in the end, our hero stays clean. And then she ends up getting the spot. That's how you make it into a movie that is then a kid's movie, but still a movie. Yeah. If you want it to be raunchier, then she does actually maybe get the opportunity. And it turns out that if she sleeps with the right guy, she gets it. She instead decides to go to this audition and blows everyone away. Right?
Hmm.
That's how you make this a movie. The problem is it can't decide. Like, we never find out how Nick knows these people. Right? Like, yeah. It would be great if it was his ex-wife who was on the panel.
Oh, I love that. Oh,
there you go.
That would create some tension.
Right? And then, like, she might be against her.
She's eating lobster. The ex-wife is eating lobster during the audition.
Seductively.
She's just there eating a lobster salad, just making eye contact the whole time.
Dipping it in a lot of unnecessary butter. Yes.
That's right. Just it's like I think you should leave sketch. There's just butter everywhere. There's, like, too much butter and just, like, dripping down her face, like... And then she's wearing that stupid fucking hat, just like just sucking out the claw meat, and you're just like, oh man, there's so much tension right now. She's dusting on some more Old Bay. What could possibly be happening?
Oh no, God.
I love Old Bay.
You know, there's actually a movie that the Wayans brothers, the people who brought you Scary Movie 1 and 2.
And White Chicks.
And White Chicks, they actually made a dance movie called Dance Flick, which is a parody of all the dance movies. You Got Served, Flashdance, Step Up, Ray, for some reason. There's a scene, Fame. Oh my God, Fame. You know,
How have we not mentioned Fame yet? Damn.
That's a good movie.
I've only seen the Anthony Mackie remake that they did in the mid-2000s, not the OG version that they did whenever the OG version was, because I don't know when that movie came out.
Very good. We should, I guess, wrap this film up. She goes back. She decides to go through with the audition anyway. She goes back to, I guess, the green room the backstage of the old club and gets all of her makeup and stuff in a scene that I guess is supposed to feel cathartic, but we don't know the character she's talking to. So it doesn't really work.
It's weird.
It is. Because I don't know what this woman's supposed to be. Is she supposed to be sad? Is it supposed to be the... Like, because to me, if this was real life, this would be friend of the show, Candace Wislofsky, who loves doing what she's done and done it for years, right? Like, the woman who's backstage, who's been doing it for a decade, she likes doing this. She likes being in stage. So you can't make her, this broken character if we've never been introduced to her before, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's something Showgirls does better. The woman who's backstage, the women backstage actually really like doing this. Are just our main character goes too far, which is a different thing altogether. Then we have the crying and confession scene, and then we have the final dance number, which, you know, again, we should talk about this. She's wearing leg warmers because it's the 80s. She's wearing an all black leotard, which is cut in the way that only leotards in the 80s could be cut, where yeah. It doesn't quite fit her crotchular region. And it's like, it's the sides go way too high on the thigh, and it's like oddly narrow. So you see a lot of skin in places you don't expect to see. Anyway, and on the wall of this room are like old military dudes. They didn't decorate this with dancers. It's just people in military uniforms and old black and white photos. Along the back wall are the judges. And we have four men and a woman. And one guy who keeps blowing his nose the entire show. And everyone else is smoking. And to Nora's point, what would make this more compelling is if this was a black woman, because everyone else in this movie is white. And so if the judges were all white, then they're subtly saying something. But this isn't like a young Whitney Houston or something. Yeah. This is just another very pale person who dances slightly more modern than they're used to. And someone's monocle falls off. So there's that.
Also, I had my captions on and there was something funny in the captions in that scene. When she's dancing and the one guy starts tapping his foot, you know, and they're like getting into it. It says the guy that blows his nose, he blows it along with the music, and it says he blows his nose rhythmically.
Oh, Jesus.
It says blows nose rhythmically.
It's funny because I noticed that. But I also just like B, how the there's this one woman who looks like everyone's English teacher with the red hair and the bangs who gets so excited.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's, and again, the dance sequence is funny because she messes up and does what her sister does not do, right? She picks herself up and keeps going, which is good. And I believe it's actually her doing it. We don't have any cut where you don't see her face. You see her face pretty much the whole time. But woman can dance. This part is really good.
Yeah, this part's really excellent, I felt.
It is, but they used a lot of stunt dancers and they didn't credit them initially. So that was controversial later.
I will say this, and it kind of brings everything in a full circle from the movie, if you noticed. And as someone who's taken ballroom dance for 3 years in high school, and there was a phase where I crumped. She was actually, every type of dance, whether it was breakdancing, figure skating with spins, she incorporated all that in her routine. I don't know if it, you know, obviously, because like she wasn't spinning like that on stage, and she damn wasn't sure popping and locking and spinning on her back, because you know what I mean. So that was something that I kind of noticed. Like she just like
the break dancers on the street they show earlier,
right?
Where she gets her
influence. We didn't mention that scene.
Her sister. Yeah, they're showing her and her influences, I guess.
Yeah,
that scene is amazing because like it's her and the boy, right? It's her and the guy, but they're just standing watching these people and time is passing because they cut back to the dancer and they cut to them and they cut back to the dancer and cut to them. And every time they do that, there's more people in the crowd, there's less people in the crowd, there's a different dancer. So it's as though she had a stroke. It's really bad filmmaking storytelling, but it's just so funny how she's just like.
Also, if you notice, I don't know if it was just me. So in the background from the breakdancing, you can see a cop car just come through. And I'm like, oh, they're going to get busted. And the more cuts to it, the cop gets closer and closer. And then all of a sudden there's a crowd, but no cops. No one gets arrested. Like, why have this? Did you not get the permits to make sure the background, whatever, was cleared? Like, that was just weird. That one thing I could nitpick was that scene.
I didn't notice that, but I'm glad we mentioned this scene because I also really appreciated near the beginning of the movie, there's like a crosswalk cop guy that she goes and has like a full minute of interaction with where she kind of is like goofing off with him. And then at the end, he pretends to take out his gun and shoot her, which like, I guess is like funny and cute back then. Like nowadays, I was like, oh, like a little bit anxious about that. But I thought that scene was also really cute. Like her dancing with this crosswalk guy that she clearly sees, you know, every day or whatever.
I wonder what moves he got from her. It was like the finger guns.
she should have put that in her final performance. She did. She went past each person and she pointed.
She did. She was
point.
Yeah, she did.
That was it.
Yo. Okay. All right.
So, have you guys been seeing the meme going around, which you guys may not get the same kinds of memes that I get? It's something, Lauren, I feel like for some reason, I feel like you might know about this, about a person's eyes, like the shape of their eyes. And if you can see the white underneath the eyes, like kind of like what Nick is doing, but less crazy looking, it's supposed to mean like, that you are like doomed or cursed to have like a tragic life. And so the meme points out all these famous people that have that kind of eyes. And like Michael Jackson is one of them. It's like an S word. I don't know what it is, but it's, I don't think you
have. Hold on,
no, you don't have it, but it's something to do with like when your eyes, when you can see the whites underneath. The point was, where I was going with this was, I feel like Jennifer Beal has them because I feel like she has like what you would call sad.
So it's called Sanpaku eyes.
Yeah.
Come from Japanese. It means the three whites. White parts of their eyes showing either above and below is known as, which can, a cosmetic feature. Okay. Yeah.
And it's just, it's supposed to indicate, like, you know, somebody who has like tragedy or something in there. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting because, like, Michael Jackson, like, yeah, he had a very tragic life.
Yeah.
I don't know that Jennifer Beals did. He was in the L Word.
Yes. They're associated with
who, Michael Jackson?
No, Jennifer Beals. With
tragedy and violence. Are still likely to develop illness or die a tragic death. Oh.
Well, I mean, they also believe, instead of in the zodiac, in that your blood type predicts your future. So I take it with a grain of salt.
No, I just think it's interesting. I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't think any of us have them.
Anyone else have a favorite dancer we haven't talked about? I like the lady who looked like Ziggy Stardust, who started her dance with the catcher's mask on for some reason. That was sharp. That was right about when Robert Wool got beer poured on him, and then you had someone else pour beer on someone on the guy's crotch. Right around when we're talking. But like, it's just...
I like Jeannie when she just has her legs up. You know, and she's just doing this. She's just circling.
Oh,
in the strip club when she was naked?
Yeah, she's naked, but they don't show it. But yeah, she's like this with her legs.
I mean, they do eventually show it. I just in general, though, what she should have is gal pals that are among the other dancers. I mean, that is kind of a lost opportunity, because like, why do any of them care about her or not care about her? It'd be great if she had a rival. It'd be great if she had friends or allies. But instead, it's just like, but what do the men have to say in this scene every single time, which is kind of a problem. Anyway, she gets into the dance studio, and then Nick has roses for her, and then she gives one to him, and then it cuts to black.
Kind of after he kidnapped her dog, let's note that. Her puppy.
With a bow tie. Dog has a bow on him, like he's Alexis at Christmas.
Right. He does get points for that. I mean, acknowledging the puppy. I don't know. I feel like I have a problem with, like, just their relationship to begin with, so I don't know if anything he did could redeem him fully for me. Just
he's a jerk, I agree with that, but he's also just not a complete character is kind of the problem too, because he's of one goal, he's of one mind, whatever, period. But banging soundtrack, like, this is just like, it's such a good soundtrack. Yeah.
I also kept finding myself thinking, especially the scenes where she's alone, for some reason those were the ones for me where I was like, this is just a pretty scene. Like she's sitting, when she was sitting at her workplace and there's like the red light above her and she was waiting to open the letter from the school, and then she decides to open it and it just looks cool. Or like after Hannah died and she's sitting there on the floor smoking, you know, it's just pretty. Every single shot is just a pretty scene.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, there's a lot of stark backgrounds, brick walls and stuff where she's, like you said, like she's smoking and she's just having a moment wearing these like baggy sweatshirts. It looks good. There's a purpose to all of this. I don't know. I think we're about done here. Nora, what's your final thoughts?
Like most things, if you don't take it seriously, you find a really good movie in this. Like y'all said, the soundtrack was really good. Having seen this movie for the first time and just hearing all the music to it, especially that Maniac song, you know, it's really good. You know, acting could have been better, but it's the 80s. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't know what was. It kind of had Rocky vibes to me. Rocky One, you know, with the small town steel mill person trying to make it out, you know, that just needs a break. But I genuinely enjoyed the movie. If I watched this when I was 16, I don't know how I would turn out. But watching it as a 30-year-old, I'm mad at myself that I didn't watch it when I was 16. So,
Daniel, do you have a thought?
First and foremost, the soundtrack is wonderful. It is an amazing soundtrack that's still got a lot of classics on it, so go check that out. The movie itself is just kind of weird to me. I mean, it's not really a movie. It's like a bunch of almost unrelated vignettes with the same actors in them, but I mean, I don't really think this has any characters. It's certainly not any sort of groundbreaking storytelling. I mean, I think the reason people liked it back in the 80s was because of the aesthetics and the fact that people in the 80s were apparently monstrously horny. I don't think the movie holds up that well, but again, wonderful soundtrack.
Lauren?
No, this movie was better than I was expecting and remembering. Like I said, I had first seen it in eighth grade. It was better than I was expecting. If you're looking for Oscar winning or anything like that, no. But I thought the soundtrack's excellent. The dancing's excellent. It's trying to have heart. Very much, I feel. It's trying to have that heart and Alex, and that she's like this independent woman who's just trying to make her dream. The older gentleman, there's some issues with the problematic with the older guy. But some of these scenes I felt were generally, you know, kind of sexy. And I feel like it's very much of the time. I think this is very much representative of the time. So just know that going in. But yeah, not great, but not bad either.
Giga?
Yeah, I think in that same vein, if you like 80s, like if you were like a person who identifies as someone who likes 80s movies, you will like this movie. I feel like if you like movies about dance, you've probably already seen this movie, but you will like this movie. It's fun. It's, you know, not too heavy. I personally didn't have any problem. I thought it was fun to watch. It was fun. Yeah.
Meh. I mean, I'm with you. I like the music. It's a nothing movie. It's one of those ones that, like, I had to follow along because I was struggling to remember stuff that happened because it could be any number of movies. There's nothing like distinct. I mean, for example, Saturday Night Fever is not a great film, but you remember that rape scene and that grounds you in like, oh, this is that movie. You know, like there's nothing like, oh, this is that movie other than that very beginning and the very end. Yeah. So it's just a lot of easy breezy nonsense. But with that in mind, of course, this is our February release. We're talking romance. We started with Matthew Quinn's baffling selection of Legend for romance. Followed by this, of course. Next week we are doing Teen Witch. And then finally, this is a weird February where we have a lot of Thursdays for a short month. We will do Lauren's pick of Pretty Woman for week 4. And we will wrap up the month with Ghost, the Patrick Swayze erotic haunting movie. So thanks for doing what you do. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for reviewing us wherever you get us and doing all you do to keep us on the charts. We appreciate you.
Hey, can I just add, come see It's a Wonderful Life at Players Guild at Sugar Hill, first 2 weekends in November. You will see my friendly face in the show. You're welcome to come see it, whoever wants to.
Thank you very much. And check out Cine Improv wherever we're performing this week, or this month, rather. Bye, everyone. Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nur Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Nur Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.